We're going to look at thermoregulation in insects. Thermoregulation is the active control of heat gain or loss to keep the body temperature within a specific range. We'll talk about many mechanisms for thermoregulation. Behavioural mechanisms are very important. Generally, for insects, temperatures of 40 degrees or above are lethal, and similarly below 0 degrees, the freezing point of water. This is just a generalisation. There are insects can withstand much higher temperatures, and those that can withstand very, very low temperatures as well. Just to get some terms out of the way, homeothermy is the common system in birds, mammals and in us, where the body temperature is relatively constant and independent of ambient temperature. That doesn't apply to insects. Poikilothermy does apply to insects. It's where the body temperature is variable and primarily dependent on the ambient temperature. Now, the origin of heat can be used to define a couple of terms as well. Endothermy is where the heat that determines a body temperature is produced by the animal's energy metabolism. And the only continuously endothermic terrestrial animals and birds are birds and mammals. Ectothermy is where the heat that determines a body temperature is acquired from the environment. And it depends where, if we're thinking of an insect, that could come by radiation, convection or conduction, depending on where the insect is located, what it's touching. Heterothermy is where an animal is endothermic part of the time and ectothermic part of the time, and that does apply to some insects. Some insects, especially those in flight, as we'll mention later, can generate quite a lot of metabolic heat in their flight muscles. And regional heterothermy is common in some large flying insects. They can switch between endo and ectothermy, but only do so in particular parts of the body by maintaining temperature zones in the body. Let's just have a look at an equation for heat balance. dH to T is the change in heat in the body per unit time, and it's related to the amount of heat produced, such as metabolic heat. The C is the body's conductance, or its tendency to lose heat, whereas TB minus TA is the difference between the body temperature and the ambient temperature. And as I mentioned, heat can be lost by conduction, convection, radiation, and evaporation. Insect flight generates a lot of heat. The thorax of an insect is packed with flight muscles, very, very active muscles, and they produce a lot of heat. So the challenge to insects is to dissipate that heat because it could quite quickly reach lethal levels. We found that there are many adaptations in insects that actually are designed to maintain the flight muscles at a relatively high temperature, higher than ambient, but not so high that they become lethal. That's an example of regional heterothermy. Honeybees and moths are a classic example. Now, if we look at this diagram, there's heat exchange occurs in the abdomen-thorax junction. If this was a bumblebee, which this is modelled on, you can see that hemolymph flow within the aorta goes from the rear to the front, and it passes through a very narrow region called the petiole, and there's an insulating air sac at the front of the abdomen. Now, that the direction of pumping of hemolymph through the aorta takes cool hemolymph from the abdomen into the thorax, and that's where the flight muscles are generating heat. And due to the aorta, the tube, pumping hemolymph into the thorax, there is a more passive or more diffuse flow of hemolymph through the petiole, passing quite close to the aorta. And there, heat exchange takes place. You can see that the higher temperature of hemolymph in the thorax, as it passes against the opposite flow of hemolymph in the aorta, will dissipate some heat back into the hemolymph in the aorta. So this mechanism, you can say it's adapted to maintaining the flight muscles at an elevated temperature compared to ambient, but it's using the abdomen as a dissipator of excess heat. So it's designed to keep this temperature differential between the thorax and the abdomen, and it does not allow excessive heating of the flight muscles. In honeybees, the petiole, the aorta, is actually in a spiral shape, which hasn't been drawn here, to increase the surface area for this countercurrent mechanism of heat exchange. So there are quite a lot of insects. If you pick up a flying moth, a moth that's been active for quite a long time, frequently you can actually feel the elevated temperature of the thorax compared to the rest of the body. So they are warm-blooded in inverted commas, but specifically the term is regional heterothermy. If we look at some experiments that have been done in a normal insect, I think this was done on a moth, you can see that as the insect starts to fly, the thoracic temperature elevates quite quickly and stays at an elevated level. Here it's above 42 degrees. The abdomen also increases in temperature, but at a slower rate. So this is that countercurrent mechanism taking place, and heat is being dissipated from the abdomen. The abdominal temperature rises along with the thoracic temperature over a long period of flight. If the heart is tied off, you can see that the abdominal temperature doesn't rise anywhere near as much. Thoracic temperature rises so quickly that the animal dies from excessive heat in the thorax. So you can see that it's a finely tuned mechanism to keep the temperature elevated but not exceedingly high. The challenge of warming up and cooling down, those challenges are met in many diverse ways by insects. First of all, at low temperatures, when insects want to be able to fly, because their motor system, their muscles, are adapted to working most efficiently at a higher temperature, if the ambient temperature is lower than that, let's say it's 10 degrees centigrade, then they need to be able to reach a higher temperature before they can fly. So what they do is they shiver. They have this specific behavioural or neurobiological mechanism for the muscles to act against each other. So the muscles are doing work, but the wings are not flapping up and down. You can actually see the thorax shivering. That's generating heat. The temperature of the flight muscles in the thorax will increase quickly. And then once they reach a high enough level, the insect can fly quite efficiently, and the flight itself then maintains the body temperature required for flight. Honeybees are another example. They've been studied quite a lot in the temperate regions of the world. And even when it's very, very cold, ambient temperatures are low, they're still able to forage. And that's because they never cool down, because honeybees can thermoregulate the nest. So they can forage in winter in temperature and temperate climates quite efficiently. But if the hive was not maintained thermoregulated, then the hive would die. Small insects can rarely reach very high temperatures because the conductive heat loss is so high that the body temperature is near ambient even when they're flying. So thermoregulation is more of a challenge for larger insects than it is for smaller insects. But then if you think about it, smaller insects also can readily be exposed to excessively high temperatures. Let's think of a rock that's been exposed to the sun in midsummer. It will be radiating a huge amount of energy. So insects alighting on a rock like that could very quickly reach a lethal high temperature, or they'll so quickly lose water that they'll die. So they have to have behavioural mechanisms to avoid areas of very high temperature. There are many other behavioural mechanisms. If we look at the picture on the top right here, there are 1,000 Drosophila put on a temperature gradient. It's shown by colour. And these are lines that were selected. The top line was selected to prefer higher temperatures, and the line on the bottom image for lower temperatures. So insects definitely have thermal preferences. There have been many, many experiments done where they've been exposed to a temperature gradient and allowed to select the region where they prefer to sit. And it's very obvious that most insects have that temperature gradient. So they can sense the external temperature. And there's work done on Drosophila showing the location of some of these thermosensory neurons. There are some in the arista. There are some back behind the arista within the brain region. If you think about it, the way we describe temperature is a very artificial construct. What was the maximum temperature to get today? If it was 32 degrees, that's based on a thermometer within a special louvered box that has to be in the sun, has to be painted white. It's a standard, but it doesn't really reflect the variety of temperatures that are out in that environment on a day that we say where the maximum is 32 degrees. There are regions, exposed regions will reach much higher temperatures. And if you go into a forest, they're much, much cooler than the way we generally express temperature. So insects behaviourally have a lot of options finding suitable places to rest or to feed or lay eggs, do whatever they need to do, where the temperature is appropriate for them and it's not at lethal levels, either high or low. There are some very specific behaviours that have been observed in insects in extreme environments. Namib desert beetles that run around on sand dunes, they're predators. They've been shown to undergo what's called stilting behaviours, where they lift their body off the substrate, where the substrate would get to a very high temperature on a hot day, and so they're able to increase the distance between their body and the sand. Also, they undertake short flights and they quickly cool the animal without sort of building up too much excess heat through the flight itself. So they've got these behavioural mechanisms, stilting and short flights. Honeybees use a lot of evaporative cooling in high temperatures. Individuals regurgitate water from the crop and spread it around their mouth parts, and that creates a lot of evaporative cooling, very efficient evaporative cooling. And more recently, it's been found that there's actually active foraging for water supplies. Some water collectors are promoted to forage when the hive temperature increases. They go and forage specifically for water. They return, they regurgitate it, others drink it until it's spread throughout the hive, and then all individuals will do this regurgitating behaviour. And also you'll see quite a number of individuals will be near the hive entrance and buzzing their wings but without flying, so that they're creating airflow which increases the efficiency of evaporative cooling. So they have these quite advanced mechanisms for thermoregulating under high temperature conditions. Dragonflies undergo or take up this vertical basking position, it's called an obelisk position, where by doing so they minimise their body's exposure to the direct rays of the sun, and so then do not accumulate so much heat energy from the sun. Another interesting phenomenon, though it's not specifically thermoregulation, it's finding drinking water, is these Namib desert beetles, where they have fog condensation structures on their bodies. There's very little water in the desert, but foggy air comes through in the morning. So these beetles orient to the tops of dunes where the fog is rolling in, and they have special cuticular structures on their thorax and abdomen that seem to be nucleating centres for condensation water. And that condensation water on their body then forms into droplets that, because of the position of their body, drop towards the mouth parts where they can then drink the water. So it's a very efficient mechanism for extracting water from water vapour in the air. Cold and heat tolerance. Some insects are able to supercool, meaning that their temperature can go below zero without freezing. So it's often based on antifreezants in their hemolymph, such as glycerol, high levels of glycerol. Glycerol tends not to nucleate when it gets to low temperatures, doesn't form crystals. Forming ice crystals turns tissue into mush. It breaks cell walls and is lethal. But if you can prevent the formation of crystals by allowing supercooling, then you're able to withstand low temperatures. Freeze tolerance is slightly different. Ice crystals don't form. They do form, sorry, but they don't cause tissue damage. And it seems that the insects do this by restricting ice crystal formation to parts that don't have high cellular density, and so there are fewer cell membranes to be broken down. Heat shock proteins are expressed in insects when tissue is exposed to high temperatures that can be damaging. And these heat shock proteins set in train a whole molecular mechanism that protects proteins from damage due to high temperatures. Social insects tend to have a lot of specific structures and behaviours to regulate the temperature of the hive, because so much investment is into the caste system and the hive itself, then loss of the hive through high or low temperatures is catastrophic. We've already talked about honeybees. Ants, by generally making nests underground, the temperature changes are highly buffered underground, so they don't reach the extremes that are experienced above ground. They localise their eggs and larvae within the nest so that they're at optimal temperatures. Termite mounds have been studied by architects and engineers because of their cooling ability. It seems that a lot of the design of a termite nest is about maintaining temperature within set limits and maintaining the humidity, because termites themselves are very prone to dehydration. There's a couple of videos on the website, linked to the website or on the Blackboard page, about termite nests, and there's a website that you should have a look at, looking at the structure of termite nests in relation to maintaining temperature and humidity gradients.